Hello, everybody, and welcome to Friends of the Force, a Star Wars podcast. I am your host, Brad Whipple. Thank you all for tuning in, as always, and happy August. Today's episode is a part of our From a Certain Point of View series, where we interview the creative minds behind the franchise who bring us the Star Wars stories we know and love. So today's episode, we have a very special guest. She is a writer and actress who's lived in many, many different parts of the world. She's written both for Black Nerd Problems as well as Tor.com, and she also has a YA historical fantasy book in the works. However, she will be making her fictional debut this November in From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back from Del Rey Publishing. So without further ado, let's get right to my interview with writer Brittany Williams.
So what I told you was true, from a certain point of view.
A certain point of view?
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to From a Certain Point of View, our Star Wars series in which we interview people from around the Star Wars galaxy who are making it, creating it each and every day. And I'm so excited to bring on yet another creator, a new creator to the Star Wars universe. She is a writer and actress, and she is going to have her work featured in the upcoming book, From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back. I'm super pleased to welcome Brittany Williams to the show. Brittany, how's it going today?
Hey, it's going great. Happy to be here.
Right? Well, welcome to the Star Wars universe. We're happy to have you, at least in a publishing realm. Obviously, you've been a Star Wars fan for quite some time,
yes.
But it must feel super exciting to join the publishing family. I think Star Wars publishing has been such a great place for people to come in and share their perspectives on Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
Because there's just so many books coming out,
right.
And it's so ample with opportunity for new voices. So how does it feel to start to be a part of that family now?
It still feels a little surreal. Like it's like I'm writing fan fiction, but it's not fan fiction because it's canon. So it's one of those things that, like, as a fan, you kind of dream of being able to do, like, to influence or like participate on a creator level with this thing that you love. And so it's like, here I am doing that. And I still can't believe it. I just, part of me won't believe it until like the book is printed and I like open it up and see my story and like can sign my name next to it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's here. It's like this. So yeah, it still doesn't feel real.
Yeah, I got to imagine it is super surreal. And I feel like it must have felt strange that day that it was all announced, because I know there was so much secrecy and also a lot of vague tweeting from Tom, who is one of the Del Rey editors. And
yes,
we were like all wondering what's happening. And the list starts coming out, and then, you know, you threw your tweet out there using that hashtag, and you're saying this is going to be your fictional debut. And
yes,
it was just so exciting to see how many different people were involved, how many new people were involved,
right,
on the project. So it is really special. And I think From a Certain Point of View is always a fun one to introduce,
yeah,
us to some new writers.
Yeah, no, and it really is. And even the first From a Certain Point of View brought in a bunch of new writers to like the Star Wars publishing side of things. So it's just fantastic to be a part of like this second wave of all these new names and new people.
Yeah.
And it's you, like me knowing personally that I was gonna be a part of it, that happened like well before the announcement happened. So it's like you sit on this like huge secret for a long time and it's like you can't tell anybody. And it's like, you really need to be careful who you even tell in your family, because sometimes, you know, people in your family can have big mouths and you don't want to be the one who, you don't want to be like the Star Wars leaker. You don't want to be the one who,
right,
writes that info out there. And the day that the announcement happened on social media, I was just sitting at my computer waiting. I had like alerts turned on and I was like, okay, I'm waiting for them to tweet it and then I'll retweet it so I don't get in trouble for like jumping the gun and putting the information out first. And everybody was so nice. And just all the other writers, just like all of us retweeting each other and liking our tweets and just putting like reaction gifs in each other's mentions. It just felt like this huge love fest and all the fans being like, oh my gosh, this is going to be your first thing. Congratulations. And it just felt really good. felt really nice. Yeah.
That's what Star Wars is about at the end of the day. I think it's about mm-hmm. family. And yes. even within the franchise and outside of it, I've found a lot of my friendships through Star Wars. And I think that's the same for many people, right? Because we mm-hmm. all share this crazy, rabid passion right. for this galaxy and the characters yes. within it. And the fact that we go so crazy over 40 tertiary characters from right. a movie, right? Like, yeah. oh, that one guy in the background with an ice cream man. Container need like 20 pages about him. Let's go. Yes. You know, like, yes. and that's just so special about Star Wars.
Right. I mean, but that's like the quintessential fan experience. Like you somehow like this character in the background who like barely gets any like real screen time, something about them like catches your eye and you're like, oh, I want to know more about that person. I wish that like they got their own spinoff movie or something, but that's mm-hmm. not usually the case. Then you have like from a certain point of view where you really do get that.
Yeah.
So we don't have to crawl through AO3 looking for it.
Love that website. I'm guilty. Yes, I've written too. Stuff on it before. So I
have too. So, and on fanfiction.net. So, and like old school live journal fanfic. So
yeah.
there's no shame in that. None whatsoever.
So rewinding our time machine to go back to when you first had Star Wars come into your life, what did mm-hmm. that look like for you? What did that relationship with the story look like, and how did it influence you, whether creatively or professionally?
I was born in 86, so I came into a world that like Star Wars was huge already. There's no way that like growing up I could not experience Star Wars. I think the first Star related thing I saw was like the Star Wars episode of Muppet Babies. Right. So
that's a new one. Like,
yeah.
I love that though.
Right. And then like the official first Star Wars movie that I saw was The Phantom Menace. And I saw that in theaters in 1999. So it was a little, I wasn't quite sold yet. Like, I was like, I know this has to be good because everybody loves it, but this movie, I'm confused. So I kind of like really, really dove into the fandom like fully later on. And I've always been a fan of Princess Leia because at my core, I'm a Disney princess fan. And so to have a princess character who also got to be like a fighter and a leader and more than just like being rescued on the side, that was something that I always loved. And for a while it felt like I could only find that in like villainous female characters. So it was nice to see that in a hero. Yeah, so she was kind of my for real entry point once I found my way back to Star Wars after I got like over the pain of The Phantom Menace. So.
Yeah, The Phantom Menace is definitely an acquired taste, especially right? if it's like your first introduction to Star Wars, right? It's really like a really hard whiskey. First time you drink it, it's going to taste a little different. But then the right. more the more practice you get with it, you're like, all right, this
yeah,
is something
I will
pull out of the cabinet on a Friday night and indulge in a little bit.
Yeah. Or I guess for me, it's more like Everclear. Like it's really like you shouldn't consume it by itself. But if you like in relation to everything else, it's like, okay, I can like, if I mix this a little bit, if I take like just a little teeny sip and only watch like the big fight between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and Darth Maul, then maybe I'm good. Then I'm good.
Then we're in business.
Right.
And I think for you too, you seem very fandom involved outside of Star Wars. And mm-hmm. I was reading one of your articles that you had written on Tor.com back in
yes.
2017. And it's mm-hmm. called All My Role Models Are Evil.
Yes.
And so you talk about you and your cousin playing Superman and Lois Lane and how you'd be role-playing and then all of a sudden your cousin's off doing something. You're like, hey, I'm still
right.
here waiting to get rescued. Like, what's going on?
Right.
You know, what, did you forget about me?
Right. I was so hurt. I was so clearly because I haven't forgotten that. And we were like, what, like 5 or 6. So
mm-hmm.
It stuck with me.
So did you want to walk some of our listeners kind of through what that article is about and how it even influenced where you have found some of your favorite characters, even outside of a Princess Leia?
Yeah, so basically with that article, I kind of started by going back to when I was a kid and hanging out with one of my male cousins, and we were playing Superman. Of course, he's a boy, so he got to be Superman, and I had to be Lois Lane. So my role as Lois Lane was to wait in the living room to be rescued by Superman. So I'm waiting, and 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 he never comes. And so eventually I'm like, well, what's going on? And I go find him, and he's off doing something else because he's done playing Superman, and he's like defeated the bad guy and never came to rescue me. And that, like, no, I didn't want to be like that female character who always like waited to be rescued. I wanted to be a part of the action. I was like, well, why can't I be Superman? And it's like, because you're a girl. And a lot of the like entertainment that was coming out when I was a kid, if there was one female character, then usually she was the one always getting rescued, mm-hmm. or she was like the like teen mom or like the teen cheerleader or something. Except if she was evil, then she got to fight. Usually she could like beat the good guys. So I was like, well, if I want to actually get in on the action, I have to be evil. And a good example, y'all may not remember this show. It's the American dub of a Japanese anime. It was called Ronin Warriors. And there was a female character on that show called Lady Kyra. And she was like stronger than everybody else and unbeatable to the point where they couldn't defeat her. They had to turn her good to like beat her. So I was like, yes, that's who I want to be. That's my character. So I just found myself leaning, like going towards the strong female characters who could like really fight so I could be involved in the like actual role playing instead of just chilling on the sidelines, pretending that I've been tied up by the bad guy and waiting for somebody to remember that I'm part of the game too. And like I said, that's what drew me to Leia. That's why I love Rey. And like, of course, love Ahsoka.
Asajj Ventress, even. She's definitely kind of fits in that category. She's so great. You know, that ruthless confidence that you talk about.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's interesting to find yourself like wanting to be like, I want to be the bad guy. You know, I want to, like, those are the female characters that get to be confident, that get to be assertive, that, you know, don't have to put up with just being pushed aside or just be there to provide information. So, yeah, that has kind of followed me into every single aspect of my fandom. There's also a little part of me that still loves, like, Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty, but, you know, sometimes you got to go for the evil characters.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm a huge Kylo Ren Ben Solo fan, so I always love me a bad guy every now and then. And Leia, especially, I think in that first movie, A New Hope, she is kind of the, you know, rescue me character, but immediately once she is rescued, she's like, get out of my way, into the garbage chute, fly boy, you know? And she takes control right away, and she really develops herself as a leader in the beginning of The Empire Strikes Back, and as somebody who goes on to rescue Han Solo, and the roles kind of flip themselves on their on its head, and then becoming resistance leader. So she follows such an amazing, incredible path while losing so many things around her that are important to her, like her planet and her husband and her eventually her son. Like, there's just so much trauma that she goes through, but she maintains hope throughout all of it with that little bit of confidence, a lot of confidence and strength. And all the qualities you want to see in those characters that, for you, you had mentioned you'd only ever seen in, you know, Clint Eastwood or Bruce Lee or John Wayne.
Right. So, and like, even in the very beginning of A New Hope, like, as soon as she's in front of Tarkin, she's like, oh, I knew it was going to be you. she doesn't back down, and, you know, she gets tortured and all that stuff. Like, it's just, she's such a great character. If only they'd let, you know, Carrie Fisher wear a bra.
Going to the Empire Strikes Back and watching it back then and now getting to add your voice into that story, what did the process look like for you to get involved with the upcoming From a Certain Point of View book? Like, when did you first find out about it, and even what has been your relationship with the Empire Strikes Back? Because I think for many people, it's, you know, one of the most renowned of the films.
Empire Strikes Back, of the films, it's definitely in my, I want to say it falls either third or fourth for me, like of the top films. And as far as me getting involved in the anthology, I had met Elizabeth, one of the editors at like multiple cons and stuff, and developed a rapport with her. So I was like, gosh, I really want to like write something for Star Wars. And luckily, before they started picking writers for this, I managed to get a literary agent. So I made sure to like let my agent know, like, look, I'm really interested in Star Wars. I sent Elizabeth, or I got a sample of my writing. So I'm working on a separate YA novel that I have a draft of. So I sent that along so, you know, they could get a sense for my writing and understand that I'm not just like, you know, trying to throw myself in there with no skills to back up, you know, my bravado. So yeah, she read my samples and she reached out to my agent and invited me to be a part of the anthology. And I really believe that these, the From a Certain Point of View anthologies are kind of like ways for them to audition new writers. Yep. Or to bring new people in. So I just, the timing was right. I was prepared. I had the right person in my corner to kind of put me out there. And yeah, so.
What does the timeline look like? Have you already started writing the portion of the book from you? And like, how long do you typically get for this sort of thing when there's so many different authors involved? Because I would imagine maybe the time is shrunk a little bit because there's so much to edit. But and it's also coming up in a few months, which is crazy to think about, right? So yeah, you had to have already started writing it. I'm losing track of time.
No, house. What is time? No, but yeah, I've already written it. Can't tell you what it was. Yeah, I think the easy part is each writer writing their own pieces because, you know, all we have to deal with is ourselves. Like all we have to do is, you know, be as true to the movie and as true to the vibe of Star Wars as we can be, write our piece and send it off to the editors. The editors have the harder job because they have all 40 of these stories to like edit and make sure that they like are at their best and fit within the world of Star Wars and stuff. So it's easy for us, it's harder for them. So we get the luxury of however much time we get, and then they just have to make a book. We have to write a story. They have to make a book.
Yeah. So. That definitely makes it a little easier on you. Just kind of get in your own zone and write to what you feel and what matters to you, you know? And you have an upcoming young adult historical fiction book coming out, which I'll ask you about a little later on. But the Star Wars book is your first piece of fictional writing. You've written for Black Nerd Problems and that article that I mentioned from Tor.com.
Yeah.
What's your writing background before this? And like, how did you originally get into it? And then what made you kind of want to take that first leap into novel writing and fictional writing, especially? Like, what are some of the challenges in going from more news-based articles to like full-fledged stories?
My writing background, as odd as it's going to sound, as far as fictional stuff, it started with fan fiction, honestly. Like that was my entry point. There was a time when I was a kid that I pictured myself writing a book. I imagined like being a writer and I wondered what that would look like. But as I'm sure other people have had this experience, I had an English teacher in particular that made me feel like I was too stupid to be a writer. So it took me a while to get back to the place where I could kind of let myself see that dream and aspiration as something that could be true. And part of what helped me with that is writing for the site Black Nerd Problems. I'm a staff writer with them, and it is mostly like news-based, but we also do editorial stuff. Every once in a while, we'll do like fan fiction adjacent things. And as a site, our editor-in-chief he very much encourages us to write in our own voice and vernacular, which is an amazing space to have as a writer of color and as a Black writer in particular. Because so often you have people tell you that like your voice is in, or like the way you write or the way you speak is incorrect, or it's not valid. So Black Nerd Problems gave me that space to kind of hone my own voice, even if it was for nonfiction work. And I've been doing National Novel Writing Month. I don't know if you've ever tried it, but it's like November, you write 50,000 words in 30 days. It's like, wow. It happens every year. It's a more of a like collective accountability thing than it's any official comp, or it does have prizes at the end. So I guess it is at this point an official competition, but I've been working at that for several years actually. And I even won twice. I think I won, or I finished my 50,000 words in 2012 and 2013.
Wow, that's incredible. Do they judge off of like in terms of like timing, or is it purely just like quality? Is there like a panel that you have to like submit your work to?
It's just, it's personal accountability. So okay. You sign up on a website and you get to work on your, like, I think if you write 1,667 words a day for the 30 days of November, then at the end you'll hit 50,000 words. And it's like, there are thousands of people who are doing it at the same time as you. Sometimes people host like write-ins where you all meet up at a coffee shop and everybody just like works quietly for a couple hours. So it's a really nice, right. It's a really nice like community building thing.
Yeah.
And at the very end, in like the last week of November, you can start to like upload your work to the website. So they'll like tell you how many words you've done. And if you win, then they have really awesome like discounts for stuff. So there's like one place that offers discounts for like getting a printed copy of your book. They do discounts for the writing program Scrivener, which is what I actually use to write. It's a fantastic program, and all kinds of other like supportive discounts that you can get. So, you know, and it's also a great feeling to know that you can sit down and write 50,000 words. Because thinking about it, like from a cerebral standpoint, it seems impossible at times, but once you've done it, it's like, this is basically a novel. I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
So working at that, I just finally, I had all, in even in winning, I had written 50,000 words, but I hadn't necessarily written a complete story yet. So I finally told myself, all right, I'm going to sit down and write this whole story. Sat down, wrote a whole story, beginning, middle, end. And yeah, the rest is, this is the book that I'm working on now. So it's gone through a couple edits, but yeah, we're getting there.
I never knew about National Novel Writing Month, but that sounds like such a fun event and very, like you said, very community-based. I'm sure instead of coffee shops this year, it'll be large gatherings on Zoom,
right.
Which will look a little different, but yeah, that's incredible. And it really seems like you did gain so much confidence from your work at Black Nerd Problems and mm-hmm. from this, you know, yearly activity, and to really get to that point where you said, yes, I am ready to write a Star Wars. Because I think most people might shy away from that, you know, and say, I don't know if I'm ready yet. It's a lot of pressure. There's a very passionate fan base, but like, you're just ready to go.
I still have those anxieties, but it's like, once I signed the contract, I had to do it. Like, there's no backing out. Like, once I committed and like, I said yes to the offer, I couldn't back out and be like, I don't believe I can do this anymore. Thanks so much for the offer. Like, I really had to rise to the occasion. And there's part of me that is nervous about how my story will be received. And, you know, I'm hoping that people will love reading it as much as I loved writing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we will find out in November.
Yeah. And your other book, so the one I mentioned earlier, the historical mm-hmm. fiction book you're writing, is called That Self Same Metal.
Yes. Well, so, working title so far.
Perfect. Good. Now, I wanted to ask you, I know you're a big Shakespeare fan. So is that working title based off of King Lear?
Yes.
That quote? Okay.
Yep.
So I'm not too familiar with King Lear, but I knew that's where that came from. But
yeah.
How has Shakespeare influenced your desire to write this project, and what can you tell us about this upcoming book?
Shakespeare, I've been in the Shakespeare fandom since I was like, God, a kid, back in the 90s when Shakespeare the Animated Tales used to show at 7 o'clock on Saturday mornings on HBO. So since then, I've been obsessed with Shakespeare. I don't know. My desire to write this particular novel, it's set during Shakespeare's time. The main character, her name is Joan. Her twin brother is an apprentice with Shakespeare's acting company, and she does fights and helps take care of some of the props for them and gets caught up in this whole plot by the Fae to take over all of England and stuff. And it's a lot happens, but basically my main desire, or the main inspiration behind this book is, as an actor, I've always wanted to perform Shakespeare. And as a Black actor, I've run into a lot of hurdles in performing Shakespeare, because it's a lot of people treat it as this place that's exclusively for white actors. Mm-hmm. And any non-white person who steps into or attempts to like become a part of the world of Shakespeare is coming in as an outsider or an interloper. And in my studies of that time period and close reading of the plays, it became obvious to me that that wasn't true. Like, London in the 1600s and the late 1500s, and actually all of the 1500s and for all time, London in particular was not as, it was a very metropolitan city. It was multicultural, and there were Black people, like, and they weren't enslaved at the time. So I want my book, or this book is me, my attempt at putting that knowledge out into the, or like just putting that out in the mainstream. Mm-hmm. And it's my, basically my assertive claiming of space as a Black Shakespeare fan, to be like, you claim that I wasn't here in history when in fact I was. So, and mm-hmm. I also include a lot of queer characters in the book, because people would like to think that, like gay, lesbian, trans characters, bisexual characters, or people, all of these people just kind of sprang up in the last like 100 or so years, and that's completely not true.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, people have been, there have been homosexual people for all time, like, yeah, everywhere, always.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like an amazing project, and it seems like publishing is starting to get like more diverse, especially in Star Wars too. Mm-hmm. And that was like one of the things I noticed on From a Certain Point of View, is just how diverse it was. And I think even Elizabeth mm-hmm. tweeted about the book's the book's motto, saying it's we dubbed it gay and in space or something.
Yes.
Like that. And I think that's become perfection. Increasingly important in Star Wars, and I'm happy to see that progress getting made. Yeah. Especially authors like Rebecca Roan Horse, who got her mm-hmm. Resistance Reborn novel last year, and Justina yeah. Ireland is writing a lot too. Mm-hmm. Daniel Jose Older. There's just so many like diverse authors getting into that space now. Have you seen right. improvements in the publishing industry? Like, do you feel that, you know, meaningful progress is being made to break down some of those traditional barriers, and what does that look like from your side?
Yeah, I do see progress being made. There's always it's always like slow and incremental, but there's definitely progress. Like, I think about in these quarantine days, I've gone back to a lot of the YA books that I read growing up as like a teen and even in like early college, and pretty much all of them were written by white women, had all white characters in them. And then I think about the books that are coming out now and how many books are written by Black women, books written by there are YA books about non-binary people, written by non-binary people, about trans people, written by trans people. Like, any experience that you may be struggling with as a teen, you can find a book that speaks directly to that mm-hmm. in a way that like, that I couldn't growing up. And that's a really, really beautiful thing. There's always more to be done. I think there was a study done, and with the percentage of books with Black characters didn't match up with the percentage of books written by Black writers. So there's still, and I've even seen people who are trying to break into publishing who are like, oh, well, you know, I wrote this book and it has a Black main character, or it has a gay main character, or it has a trans main character. And I was told that they didn't know who to sell this to or how they would sell this book. So nobody wanted to, no agent wanted to take me on, or no publisher wanted to buy my book. So there's still work to be done, but mm-hmm. we're doing a lot better. There's a lot, Star Wars in particular has been doing better with their books and comics and with representation in those than they've been doing in the films and TV shows. I think mm-hmm. the animated shows are doing much better, but especially the films. It's like, how long did it take us to get a Black woman character who had more than four lines right. and didn't die in the movie? Like, how long did it take us to get there?
Yeah.
There's definitely
some progress to be made there. And I know there were some rumors floating around about, you know, like a Lando series. And, mm-hmm. You know, I hope if that were to ever happen, you know, getting people behind the camera that can really articulate that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I know like Donald Glover, especially, who it seems like you're a big Lando fan. I was reading one of your articles on Black Nerd Problems about your claim that Lando is more smooth than Han, which I would actually completely agree with.
Yes.
Him being involved in Star Wars, and he does Atlanta, and, you know, he writes, produces, directs that show. So I'd really love to see that kind of work translate into Star Wars, because we really truly haven't seen that yet.
Right, we haven't. And he's a great Lando in Solo. Like, he's amazing in Solo.
Yeah.
We didn't get enough of him in Solo. We could use so much more of Donald Glover's Lando. Like, I personally could. And especially if it's like pansexual Lando Calrissian. Like, love it. Give it to me. That's what I want. Take my money now. Give me this.
I could watch like an 8-episode series of him just like with his feet up on the dashboard of the Falcon speaking into that thing, going, Calrissian Chronicles episode number 4. he just talks like a fireside chat.
Yes, I would love that. That would be perfection.
I totally agree with you, and I think publishing is doing a great job. I'd love to see even more progress made with the films, and even somebody like Rick Famuyiwa, who was a director on The Mandalorian. He did two
episodes were fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, the child, the stuff that he did with his episodes in particular were just so pivotal and like hard to execute in some ways. Mm-hmm. And I just have like the utmost respect for him, and I think he's returning for season 2 as well. So it was really excited to see him be the very first, alongside Vic Mahoney on The Rise of Skywalker, to be the first, you know, Black directors in Star Wars.
Right. That was really great. And you can really see, I think The Mandalorian benefited from having so many different directors with different perspectives and points of view handling the material and also being allowed to put their stamp on it, because Taika Waititi's finale episode is so like quintessentially him, but it's still completely Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that just goes to show you can really get the spirit of Star Wars. It's never just, you know, one thing. And I think that's something like what From a Certain Point of View does. And what, like you're saying, The Mandalorian does. I really love when there's a lot of creatives that come together to create one single product, you know, rather than kind of leaving it in the hands of a few people. Having as much collaboration, in my mind, has always led to a better product inside and outside of Star Wars, you know. And
really
even something
does.
Like the MCU, right? Because the MCU is made up of so many different directors and writers across all these different films, and you get something like a Black Panther by Ryan Coogler, and it's one of the most stunning films I've ever seen. It's crazy. And that leads me to one of my next thoughts about your writing for Black Nerd Problems, which was your article a couple years ago about Wakanda.
Yes. Oh, man. That's literally the first article I ever wrote for Black Nerd Problems.
It is.
My piece de resistance.
It is one of my favorite. So I told you before we started, like, last week was a little bit rough. Mm-hmm. And as I was preparing for this episode, I read this article and it gave me so many laughs that I didn't know I needed.
Good.
And it kind of speaks to how you were saying you really do get to present your voice as part of Black Nerd Problems and really have that space.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be a language warning for listeners. But
right. Yeah.
You said, forget vibranium, forget cutting edge technology, Wakanda's true number one export, not giving a fuck. And
yes,
that was, the whole article is just so good. And for anybody listening, I will link it in the description. But yeah, I had to shout that out. Like,
yes,
that
thank
being
you.
Your first article, like what was it like to write that? And also, like,
man,
what are your thoughts on Black Panther? Because this came out before
movie. That was basically just based on what we saw of T'Challa and Black Panther in Captain America: Civil War.
Yeah.
And so when I say that was my first article for Black Nerd Problems, like that was I was still on like the probationary period. So they were like, oh, well, you know, she writes fan fiction and stuff. And I don't know, like, why don't you just write a trial article for us and we'll see if we want to like keep you on. And like, I was instantly in. It was great. But it was nerve wracking. It was very scary, writing it, cause it, I'd like had a personal blog that like my grandma and a couple other friends read, cause I hadn't really like pushed for like wide distribution on that. So this was going to be like my first thing putting out there for this larger platform. And they gave me free rein to like write about whatever I wanted to write. And the inspiration for this came to me. And so I sat down, I think I wrote it in maybe like an hour or two, and sent it over. It was sitting on like pins and needles and it went live, and just watching people enjoy it, was incredible. and I remember, oh gosh, I'm a huge NK Jemisin fan. She tweeted about it and I almost passed out. She was like, this is the funniest thing I've read. Like, and I was like, oh my God. Oh my gosh. I'm it. I'm legit. This is real, y'all. This is real. I was like laid out in the middle of the floor in the office.
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with you? I was like, NK Jemisin tweeted about my article and she said it was really funny.
She wrote the fifth season series. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, it truly is. And this isn't just me having flattery. Like, it is seriously one of the funniest things I've read in so long. It just kind of goes to show like your voice and even just some of your comedic roots as well. And you do have you have a background in acting. You were, mm-hmm. you were part of the Upright Citizens Brigade. You've done improv and sketch writing. You have all these different experiences outside of traditional writing and fan fiction and your books that are coming out. So, what have some of those experiences been like for you? Like becoming an actress and, you know, you've traveled the world and done so many different cool mm-hmm. things, like, you know, being part of High School Musical Live and Hong right. Kong Disneyland. Like, your list of talents and accolades is long. And
right. Thank you.
Great.
That's such a, it's so, so I, just to bring everybody up to speed, I worked at Hong Kong Disneyland for a year as a principal vocalist. I was in their Lion King show. I did their High School Musical show, and I was there during the Beijing Olympics. So we had another show that was called Mickey Presents Dream Sports Moment. And I was like the sports coach that was helping Mickey and Minnie and Goofy and Donald and Chip and Dale all find like their dream Olympic sports. It was hilarious. And that was, you know, a thing that I did in life. With acting leading into writing, they organically fit together in such an unusual, but really, when you think about it, it makes so much sense. So as an actor, you have this set of words and you have to build a person from it. And when you look at writing, you have this idea of a person or people or a world, and you have to put that into words. So it's like the same process, but coming like the reverse of, like one is the reverse of the other.
Mm-hmm.
With acting, you already have the words and you have to kind of figure out what this person would be like, or how they walk, how they would talk, how they move, what they're like, when they're nervous, what their like comfort action is. You have to figure all those things out basically based off of words on a page. And when you're writing, you have this like picture of a person in your imagination, and you just have to figure out, well, how do I translate that into words? So you can see the gestures, you can hear the voice, but you have to like translate it into a way that other people can read it and also get that like same or similar picture. Mm-hmm. As far as like comedy stuff, I lived in London for a while, and I linked up with a sketch comedy group there, and wrote quite a few sketches for and with them, and in the grand Shakespearean tradition of writing stuff for a set group of actors. So like you have a person in mind and you try to like write a part for them that like plays to their comedic strength. So yeah, that also added into, that made me really good at writing dialogue, I'd like to think.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how it's all come together. It's like acting is seeing the words and making a person, writing is seeing the person and turning it into words.
Yeah, I could absolutely see how those two things really feed into each other and help the creative process. I would even mm-hmm. imagine, like, do you ever, when you're writing a character for your stories, like, do you like act out what you're writing to be like, does this make sense? Like, right. What I'm putting on the page, or?
Yeah, I'll play it in my head like a little movie, and I'll mm-hmm. like I'll try to like see it play out, and as I go back through and read, especially dialogue, I may get up and act out moves for my fight scenes, because you just want to make sure it looks good. Like, you just want to make sure that, you know, all the hands are accounted for and every, like, a move is going to look cool and stuff. So yeah, that's what I'll do that with my writing. Or I may like inadvertently find myself sitting like a certain character, like the way I'm writing them sitting, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's weird. Cool.
You wear many different hats, and that, I think that's very clear by your experiences and your different skills that you have. How does it kind of feel like having all these different talents and passions and fandoms that you're a part of? I can imagine it's quite chaotic, but also right. like extremely fun, enjoyable, and rewarding at the same time. Like, what is the like a week look like for you, or a day? Wow, I got to imagine it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, so right now things are really quiet because there's no acting stuff going on because of COVID-19.
True.
So it gives me a lot more time to write.
Yeah.
Previously, it like I may have rehearsal during the week or rehearsal in the evenings, and so I would have to like write during the day. I try to keep reading and watching things to kind of replenish my inspiration springs. And just to like, when you read a good book, you take in all of that. When you watch a good show, you take in all of that, and it kind of synthesizes within you and it comes out in your own work. So I try to kind of keep that going. Mm-hmm. And I also am really bad at taking on too much and making myself too busy. So before Outside got canceled this year, I was going to be in a production of Twelfth Night, Shakespeare's play Twelfth Night, down here
oh, wow.
in New Orleans. And rehearsals started in May, and rehearsals actually would have started the week I'd scheduled my wedding. So my plan was to go to rehearsal. My wedding was going to be on the Friday, and I was going to do rehearsal on Tuesday and Wednesday. We would have like the guests get in and do the welcome party on Thursday and then get married on Friday. And then I was going to go back to rehearsal on Saturday. So just to let
week.
You know, right. So just to let you know, like the kind of workaholic I am or can be. The good thing is with writing, it can happen anywhere, and it can be like a kind of, it's a more solitary thing at
right.
times. Acting, not so much. Like, you have to be around other people, you have to literally perform in front of an audience, so it's hard to find balance sometimes. It's something I still struggle with, and it does feel like it can feel really chaotic. It's two separate creative fields. So most of my like my college background is all in acting. I have a bachelor's degree in musical theater and a master's degree in classical acting. And one thing that, like, I was told in undergrad a lot was, you can't have a plan B. You can't have a backup plan. Like, if you really want to make it in this business, then it has to be like only acting. You have to only focus on that, and you can't think about anything else. Like, if you have a plan B, that means you're going to fail. And I realized that that is not good advice. It's not sound advice. It's not solid advice. So
quite intense.
Right. It is. And it doesn't make any sense. Like, yeah. you just, it's okay. You can be passionate about more than one thing. So still in the process of like unlearning that. And just finding a way to balance both things, like my passion for writing and my passion for acting. And, you know, one can feed the other. I wrote myself a one-woman show last year that I performed about, Mary Jane Richards, who was a free Black woman who lived in Richmond. And she went undercover as an enslaved person in the Confederate White House and would pass secrets to the Union through a spy network. So I was able to write that for myself and like make my own work. And then now, like a big struggle now for actors is that there's no work to be had because mm-hmm. it's not safe for us to work. It's not safe for us to gather to film things on set. It's not safe for us to be in the theater. So a lot of actors are struggling at this time because it's like, how can I express myself creatively if I can't be around other people, if I can't be in front of other people?
Right. Now so, that plan B would come in handy.
Right. So thankfully I have like my writing to lean on and to focus on. And yeah, it's been a blessing in this time. And I do mm-hmm. still miss acting. I do still want to like get out there and perform, but I at least have something that I'm equally passionate about and that is equally creative to work on.
Yeah, and as terrible as things feel right now and, you know, not really getting to do the things we love, it's been a good time for introspection, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And really nailing down, okay, once the dust settles, hopefully, mm-hmm. at some right. point.
It will. It has to.
Yeah, it has to. I have to believe. I have to hold out hope like Leia.
Yes.
Once the dust settles, like what does my life, what is it going to look like? And what mm-hmm. can I do in the meantime to put myself in a better position?
Right.
Whether it is flexing those creative muscles or mm-hmm. Taking on a new hobby. I know a lot of people are like doing like painting and learning an instrument and like doing new things, you know, to pass the time. But
yeah.
Really like Taylor Swift just dropped a great album. Like, mm-hmm. okay, Taylor, great flex,
right.
but
right.
you know, I think it's a time of opportunity. And I think for you as a writer, it must be exciting to have that, like you said, as a fallback. And, who knows what will spring from it or what new ideas that you might get in mind for your November, novel writing month, you know?
Right.
So
right. When that comes
just take
around.
Advantage of it.
Yeah. And I mean, yes, this is a time for introspection. And if all you can do is just take care of yourself, make sure you drink water, make sure you eat, make sure you get up and like clean your room every day. Like if that's all you can do right now, that is totally fine. Like
absolutely.
You don't have to come out of this like the next Picasso or suddenly I did this like photorealistic needlepoint of the Empire State Building or something like that. Or even I wrote a novel, like you don't have to.
Right.
Come out on the other side of this as some like incredibly like new productive person. If all you can do is take care of yourself and make sure you are healthy and survive this, then that is plenty.
Absolutely. You know? I'm glad you bring that point up because honestly, I've been anything but productive for the last 4 months. I haven't picked up a dumbbell at any point or
right. Let's not even
did
talk
any
about
running.
This yet. My gosh. Lord.
But it's been a rough one, but I think I always think of Parks and Rec, you know, treat yourself.
Yes.
That's super important, especially now.
It really is.
So Brittany, we like to wrap up the show here with some rapid fire questions. It's not a pop quiz, but just a fun way to get to know you and some of your other different passions. So first off is, I know you mentioned Empire Strikes Back is in like your top 3 or 4 favorite mm-hmm. Star Wars films. What would you place at your number one?
The Last Jedi.
Last
Jedi number one and Return of the Jedi number two.
I love a person with taste. Let's go.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, the taste just jumped out. Yes.
Last Jedi is my favorite, and I'm looking at the poster right in front of me at my podcasting station. It's one of my favorite films. But what particularly about The Last Jedi do you love the most?
I love the visuals. I love that it's a movie about failure. Like, every single plan that everybody makes just fails constantly. I love the use of color. I love how it feels like claustrophobic and also large at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that moment, how they use like sound and silence. It's just such a, it's such a like well-made, like well-directed, it's just such a good movie. And it just, your heart, like my heart just can't. I was just on the edge of my seat the whole time. It was just, it was great.
It was an experience. I lost all sense of reality when I came out of it because I was so shocked, but in the best way. Man. So I'm with you.
So good.
So what is one of your favorite works by Shakespeare?
One of my favorite. Which one is it? Richard III. It makes you... As much as we hate Richard, he's the bad guy, he's a terrible person, but you just really, in a way, you kind of want him to win. Mm-hmm. And it's just so interesting to see like how he moves other people to try to get his way, and then see like the full, like he gets what he wants, and then we watch the collapse of it. And one thing especially that made me love it is I saw an all-male production by this theater group called Propeller, and it was set in a slaughterhouse. Wow. Right. So it was like they like executed somebody with a chainsaw, and they like pulled somebody else's like intestines out, and it was really gruesome. But like, I knew how the play went, but I still spent the whole play on the edge of my seat. So, yeah.
So your website bio says that you're the keeper of 90s theme songs.
Yes.
So I want to know from your opinion, what is like truly the pinnacle 90s theme song? I have some of my personal favorites, but I wanted to know what yours were.
Darkwing Duck, of course. I like Goof Troop because it has a random like jazz scat in it. The old Deke Sailor Moon dub, like Sailor Moon theme song, is very motivational for me personally. The Family Matters theme song. Like, the 90s was just like such a great time for theme songs. And those are like all theme songs with lyrics. But of course, like the X-Men theme song was great and it had no lyrics. Like, it's just all really, what a feast.
Yeah.
What a feast the 90s was for all of us.
I had Family Matters down as well. I really was a huge fan of Boy Meets World. That was one of my early
and they had multiple ones, because then there was the one that was like, when the boy meets world.
It's like when they're all grown up and you're just emotional. Right? You don't want the show to end. Home Improvements is a classic. You gotta love the Tim Allen random sound that he throws in there. And then Sister, which I just found out apparently Netflix got the rights for that show, so maybe we'll see a revival of that, because that was one of my favorites growing up.
That's another one that had like multiple versions. That was always like the best thing, like when it was like the remix of the theme songs and you got to hear like new stuff. And
I'm praying for some more sister content. Love it.
But yes.
So there's a lot happening in Star Wars. There's so much, from publishing to TV to movies. What excites you personally the most that's coming out, or what has been something in the last year that's really been impactful on you?
I am really excited for The Mandalorian season 2.
Mm-hmm.
I loved season 1 of The Mandalorian. I loved seeing the behind the scenes with the that Disney Gallery series that they did, and we got
fantastic.
To see, oh my gosh, like the volume, like the space that they created, and did like game machine engines to make it seem like they were on location, but to also like keep it within a series budget but make it look like Star Wars. Like, they just did, it just was, it blew my mind. So I can't wait for season 2. When they were like, yeah, we finished all of our shooting well before everything shut down with COVID, I was like, oh, thank God.
So, yeah, I was like, you can't take Mandalorian away from me this year. Right. You've taken too much.
So yeah, I'm just really excited about that. I'm hoping they add some more female characters to the show.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm also excited to see like what new books come out. And how the High Republic. I want High Republic stuff.
Yes. It's going to be such an exciting time. And, you know, we got that delay with the Star Wars movie for 2022 by another year now. So it's just more time for people to write Star Wars books and to make Star Wars TV shows. And I think the best thing about the Disney era of Star Wars is we've expanded how you can consume Star Wars and where you can consume it. Right. Because the fact that it doesn't just have to be reserved for the films and can now truly be this all encompassing universe that you can really pick out what you love and don't love and really just seek joy where you can find it. That's really exciting.
No, it really is. And even like with games and the new
Fallen Order.
Yeah. And Battlefront 2. And they have the new Oculus. The Galaxy's Edge thing that they just announced that's like coming out and you get to like wander around Batuu and stuff.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And also I can't wait until I can go back to Galaxy's Edge because it's incredible.
Yeah. Oh God, I miss it.
Yeah.
My final question for you is, what does Star Wars mean to you?
What a question. You would think I had an answer prepared.
I told you it's a rapid fire question, but that's like a whole podcast in itself, that question.
How to encompass it. Star Wars it's such a feat of creative expression. It has so much reach. It's like, I admire it both as a creator and as a fan. It seems like something that's really fun to work on. Like, it's just it's such an aspirational thing on so many levels. Like, to imagine making something and being so like sure that it would just be a flash in the pan that you don't even show up to the premiere like George Lucas did. And then having it be this huge thing that spans like decades and goes from like one millennium to the next. Like, that's incredible to think about. To have such an expansive world that so many people can just find comfort in and find meaning in and like have stories they connect with in, that's incredible. The fact that you could grow up as a fan of this thing and then in the future become a part of it, like either as a writer or as an artist or as an actor, like when Star Wars started, these were just, you know, actors that they put in this movie called Star Wars. But now if you're in Star Wars, you're like, holy shit, I'm in Star Wars.
Like, so, Rian Johnson working with Mark Hamill. It's like, right, I watched that guy on my television screen many moons ago.
Right.
It's crazy.
So,
you know,
it's such a feat on so many levels. And wildly enough, Carrie Fisher spoke at my grad school graduation. So
that's the best graduation ever,
right? It's like undergrad we had Oprah, and then grad school I had Carrie Fisher as introduced by Debbie Reynolds. I was like, how am I so blessed?
Gosh,
I will take it.
my graduation was the year they decided not to have a speaker, so I'm so envious of you. That is amazing though.
Yeah.
Did she part you with any wisdom that has really stuck with you today?
Not particularly like at that graduation. There's been other stuff of hers that I've latched onto. Like, one, how she was so like universally loved in the business and respected. The fact that she was this incredible script doctor who is responsible for so many amazing movies that we know, and we barely even know everything that she's worked on. Mm-hmm. And like how she you know, she had to, in a way, like rebuild herself and reaffirm herself and kind of become more sure of herself again after like dealing with addictions and all kinds of issues, and still coming out as this like confident, sure, beautiful, wonderful, kind person who was so authentically herself. That just, and also like the relationship she had with her mother. Yeah, it's just really incredible. And the fact that she did, I don't think she even graduated from, she did go to the same school I did, but she didn't graduate, but they still invited her back to speak at graduation. So I was like, that is incredible. I respect it. Like, respect the hustle. So.
Yeah, Carrie Fisher is truly one of the biggest icons ever. And yes. She has done so much for so many different things. And I miss her every day. Well, Brittany, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was so fun to have you and learn more about your story. But what do you have coming up in the works that you'd like us to know about? And where can people find you online, on social media, or your website?
Yes. So, of course, I have From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back, coming out November 10th. Keep an eye out for that self-same medal. It is still being polished up, and you can watch my website, brittanyandwilliams.com, to get more info about that. You can, of course, always find me over at blacknerdproblems.com. Every Wednesday, I host, every Wednesday at 4 o'clock Eastern, I host a show on Instagram called It's a Flop, where we look at movies that flopped. yes, this month we did Treasure Planet, The Pirates of Dark Water, Atlantis, The Lost Empire, Atomic Blonde, and Showgirls. So next month we're going to do the Bratz movie, Clue, Richie Rich, and oh gosh, one other thing. One other that I can't remember at the moment.
Dang, Richie and Rich is a deep cut.
Look, I loved me some Macaulay Culkin, so it's not that deep of a cut for me. And that movie did flop. And we look at these movies with love, so don't think you're going to come on and I'm going to be like, hey, that's not going to happen. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Brittany X. That's BrittanyActs, like I am an actor and my name is Brittany. So yeah, come say hi to me. Love talking nerdy stuff with people. Yeah, and that's all I have to announce as of yet. Hopefully more things will be coming down the pipeline. So
great. Well, we're super excited again to have you in the publishing realm of Star Wars. I cannot wait to see what you have written for this Empire Strikes Back book, and I'm excited to check out your historical fiction book that you're writing.
Thank you.
So with that being said, last thing I'll tell you is may the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you. I always want to go, and also with you, like in Catholic Church, but may the Force be with you.
Always. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Friends of the Force. Really hope you enjoyed our interview with Brittany Williams. We are so, so excited and happy that she is a part of the Star Wars publishing universe now. So make sure to go check out her other work, other writing, and follow her on social media. As for Friends of the Force, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, and you can also join our Patreon at patreon.com/friendsoftheforce. It's a great way to support the show, and we have a lot of extra content that's already on there and that we're going to be putting on there exclusively for patrons. So speaking of those patrons, thank you to Anna, Cheryl, Deborah, Donnie, Elegie, Marie-Claire, Michael, Neil, Rachel, Sarah, and T. And lastly, we have Remembering Resistance Day coming up on August 29th. If you would like to participate, make sure to spread the hashtag Remembering Resistance, as well as send us an audio clip of why you love Star Wars Resistance to friendsoftheforcepodcast@gmail.com. And we are hoping to get enough submissions to include in a very special video. So that is all for this week, everybody. Make sure you're staying hydrated and wearing your mask out in public. And until next time, we are ones with the Force. We are friends of the Force. And may the Force be with you always.
Friends of the Force is a proud member of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. To learn more about our sister shows, find us on Twitter at @WeAreEscapePods. The Star Wars Escape Pods Network, promoting positivity in fandom.